Shalom Aleichem. Peace be upon you. Welcome back to the broadcast. I'm Sean, your host. Website, www.scriptureandprophecy.com. That's where you go to find the archives, the devotionals to support this work. And that's also where the email list is. Everybody's asking how to get on the email list. You go to the website. At the very bottom of the page, you can opt in to the email list. Now, today we are doing our Torah portion for the week, and it's Vayishlach, which means he sent. And the title comes from the first verse of the reading, which says, "Then Jacob sent messengers before him to his brother Esau in the land of Seir, the country of Edom." And so this portion deals with Jacob preparing to meet Esau. He returns to the promised land. He has this mysterious encounter with what this description is calling an angel, but I would say that it was actually Elohim himself. And then we have a portion follows Jacob's adventure. This portion follows Jacob's adventure in the land of Canaan, including the loss of his beloved wife, Rachel, Rachel. So this one is chock full of stuff. So I've got many resources in front of me this morning. On my computer screen, I have the King James Bible. In my hands, I have the Et Sefer. And to my left, I have what's called a Chumash. And what a Chumash is it's basically a Torah that's divided into the parshas, the portions. And so it's based, and it's for that purpose, for reading the Torah portions each week. And on one side, it has the actual Hebrew text. And so not Strong's Concordance or any type of concordances or Blue Letter Bible. That stuff is not the full-blown Hebrew, my friends. This is the full-blown Hebrew text. And then on the left is the English. And then at the bottom is all the rabbinical commentary. And so very, very interesting tool to look at. And it doesn't mean that I'm going to read it and just agree with like Rashi or whatever. What I do is I read those commentaries because I want to know what they believed at that time. What was the general thinking? We need to start, you know, the Western way of thinking about the Bible is very not correct. You know, we don't ask questions. We need to be willing to look at resources and material and what people were thinking at that time and kind of bring it all in and then come to your own conclusion versus this is what this YouTube teacher taught, so now that's my life. You know, and I talk about pet doctrines. Anyway, no time for this tangent. So those are the resources we're going to be looking at today. Now before I get started, so it's chapter 32, starting with verse 3. But we just kind of glossed over the last three verses last week, and I didn't even raise an eyebrow to it, and I should have. So let's start with actually verse 1. I want to address these three verses from last week's Parsha. And it says, "And Yaakov went on his way, and the angels of Elohim met him. And when Yaakov saw them, he said, 'This is Elohim's host.' And he called the name of the place Machayim." Now, this is very, very interesting. Jacob, he has a lot of interactions with angels and things of that nature. I mean, it says that Jacob went on his way and the angels of God met him. And then it doesn't tell us anything else other than that maybe it was just for the purpose of pointing out that where he's being met by these angels is, in fact, the Holy Land. When Yaakov saw them, he said, "This is Elohim's host," and he called the name of that place Machayim. And then it moves on. It moves on. Now, I don't have an answer for you other than to say, hey, this is worth taking note of. This is something to draw questions. You know, when we ask ourselves questions about what's going on in this text, it doesn't mean that we're questioning God or we're questioning God's word. Or it should be exciting to us to find questions like this. It's just like in verse 6, which we're getting ready to read, "And the messengers returned to El Yaakov." I brought this up last week. Why is it that sometimes in the text, and of course we don't see this in the regular English, so we have no idea that it's even there. Why is it that sometimes there's El in front of Jacob's name? These are interesting questions worth raising. Okay, 5 minutes in, we haven't even started the portion. Let's get started. Starting with verse 3, chapter 32, I'm going to read from the Et Sefer. And at some point, we're going to refer to the Chumash and read a little bit of commentary out of that when we get to the death of Rachel. Okay, let's begin. And Yaakov sent messengers before him to Esau, his brother, unto the land of Seir, the country of Edom. Now I'm going to go ahead and stop already. And I apologize for this, but it says, and Yaakov sent messengers. Do you know that in the Chumash here, in the Jewish Chumash, they translate it as angels? They say, Jacob sent angels before him to Esau, his brother, unto the land of Seir, the country of Edom. Again, worth wondering, pondering about. Verse 4. He commanded them, saying, Thus shall ye speak unto my lord Esau, your servant. Yaakov says, thus I have sojourned with Laban, and stayed here until now, and I have oxen and asses and flocks and men servants and women servants, and I have sent to tell my lord that I may find grace in your sight. Now what we see is Jacob kind of submitting to his brother. And even though that the older is supposed to serve the younger, it's almost like Jacob's like trying to kind of undo that a little bit, like to try to, he's submitting himself under Esau and saying, and calling Esau his lord. And you can just see that, and we have to remember that Esau is a hunter, right? He's a more of a burly man. He's a hunter, outdoorsman. And Jacob's more of a peaceful man. It says, the scripture tells that he dwells in tents. You know, he's more of the scholarly type. And of course, he doesn't want to fight his brother. He's terrified of his brother, as we're going to find out. Verse 6. And the messengers returned to El Yaakov, saying, we came to your brother Esau, and also he comes to meet you and 400 men with him. Then Yaakov was greatly afraid and distressed, and he divided the people that was with him, and the flocks, and the herds, and the camels, into two bands, and said, if Esau come to the one company and smite it, then the other company which is left shall escape. And Yaakov said, O Elohai of my father Abraham, and Elohai of my father Yitzchak, Yahuwah which said unto me, return unto your country, and to your kindred, and I will deal well with you. I am not worthy of the least of all the mercies and all the truth which you have showed unto your servant. For with my staff I have passed over Yarden, and now I am become two bands. Deliver me, I pray you, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, lest he will come and smite me and the mother of my children, and the mother with the children. And you said, I will surely do you good and make your seed as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for a multitude. So Jacob divides his family into bands, into sections. And what we're going to see here is something kind of important that we might miss. And I'll address it when we get there about how he divides them and how he sends them forward to meet Esau. Because he's saying to himself, I'm going to divide up my family and my flocks and all that. And there'll be a group that goes first. And if he kills all of them, then the others can escape. And then he goes to God and he prays and he reminds God of all of God's promises that he had made to him. He says, you promised me all of this. Now please deliver me from the hand of my brother Esau. Verse 13. And he lodged there that same night and took of that which came to his hand a present for Esau, his brother. 200 she-goats and 20 he-goats, 200 ewes and 20 rams. 30 milk camels with their colts, 40 kine and 10 bulls, 20 she-asses and 10 fowls. And he delivered them into the hand of his servants, every drove by themselves. And he said unto his servants, pass over before me, and put a space betwixt drove and drove. And he commanded the foremost, saying, when Esau my brother meets you, and asks you, saying, whose are you, and where you go? And whose are these before you? Then you shall say, they are your servant Yaakov's. It is a present sent unto my lord Esau, and behold, also he is behind us. And so commanded he the second and the third and all that followed the drove, saying, on this manner shall you speak unto Esau when you find him. And say ye, moreover, behold, your servant Yaakov is behind us. For he said, I will appease him with the present that goes before me, and afterward I will see his face, perchance he will accept me. So went the present before him, and himself lodged that night in the company. And he rose up that night, and he took his two women, and his two women servants, and his 11 sons, and he passed over the ford Yabok. And he took them, and he sent them over the brook, and sent over that he had. And Yaakov was left alone. And there wrestled a man with him until the breaking of day. And when he saw that he prevailed not against him, he touched the hollow of his thigh. And the hollow of Yaakov's thigh was out of joint as he wrestled with him. And he said, Let me go, for the day breaks. And he said, I will not let you go except you bless me. And he said unto him, What is your name? And he said, Yaakov. And he said, Your name shall be called no more Yaakov, but Yisrael. For as a prince you have power with Elohim and with men, and have prevailed. And Yaakov asked him and said, Tell me, I pray ye, your name. And he said, Wherefore is it that you ask after my name? And he blessed him there. And Yaakov called the name of that place Penuel. For I have seen Elohim face to face, and my life is preserved. Now, this is the story where we always read about how Jacob wrestled with an angel. But then look at what happens. The man he's wrestling with says, What is your name? And Jacob answers, My name is Jacob. It's Yaakov. And he says, It's no longer going to be Yaakov. It's going to be Israel. Yisrael. And then Jacob says, What is your name? And instead of answering the question, he asks a question. Does that remind you of anyone? It reminds me of the way Jesus deals with people in the Gospels, doesn't it? They'll ask a question, and he says, instead of answering, and Jesus will go on to ask them a question to make them think. And so Yaakov says, What is your name? And he said, Wherefore is it that you ask after my name? Then he blessed him. And Yaakov, this is why I say he wrestled with God, not with an angel, because Yaakov called the name of the place Penuel, for I have seen Elohim face to face, and my life is preserved. Verse 31. And as he passed over Penuel, the sun rose upon him, and he halted upon his thigh. So after this incident where his hip is out of joint, now he's hobbled. Jacob is now hobbled because of this. Verse 32. Therefore the children of Yisrael eat not the sinew which is shrank, which is upon the hollow of the thigh unto this day, because he touched the hollow of Yaakov's thigh, and the sinew that shrank. Chapter 33. And Yaakov lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, Esau, and with him 400 men. And he divided the children unto Leah, and unto Rachel, and unto the two handmaids. And he put the handmaids and their children foremost, and Leah and her children after, and Rachel and Yosef hindermost. Okay, let's not gloss over this situation. Jacob divides his family into camps. Remember, the reason he's doing this is because if Esau smites the first one, then the rest of them can go. And so he divides up the camps in order of importance to him. So he's got his two concubines, the handmaids that became his wife and bared him children. He sends them first. Then Leah would be third with her children, which would have been, 10 sons? Well, not 10. 10 counting the two handmaidens also. And then last, Rachel and Joseph, whom he loved the most. Now, in next week's Parsha, we're going to get to this turmoil between the brothers and Joseph, and how they hate him and despise him, and because he seems to have this favoritism that his dad shows him, and it's very clear to them that his dad loves him most. But I don't think it starts with the coat of purple of multiple collars, right? The tunic made of many collars that he gets to wear around that sets him apart from his brothers. It probably starts right here. Now imagine you're one of Jacob's children. They're men, by the way, as we're going to find out. They're not little kids. And you see that Jacob's like, no, Rachel and Joseph are going to go last. You guys go first. And that way, if you guys get attacked or killed, then they can escape. Imagine the feeling and the resentment that they're already starting to have towards Joseph. So I just suggest to you that maybe it began here at this moment. And of course, if you're Leah, and then if you're the concubines, you're thinking, wow, we're definitely at the bottom of the totem pole here. Let's continue on. Verse 3. And he passed over before him, and he bowed himself to the ground 7 times until he came near to his brother. And Esau ran to meet him, and embraced him, and fell on his neck, and kissed him, and they wept. And he lifted up his eyes, and he saw the women and the children, and he said, who are those with you? And he said, the children which Elohim has graciously given to your servant. Then the handmaidens came near, they and their children, and they bowed themselves. And Leah also with her children came near and bowed themselves. And after came Joseph near, and Rachel, and they bowed themselves. And he said, what do you mean by all this drove which I met? And he said, these are to find grace in thy sight, my lord. And Esau said, I have enough, my brother. Keep that you have unto yourself. Yaakov said, nay, I pray you, if now I have found grace in your sight, then receive my present at my hand. For therefore I have seen your face, as though I had seen the face of Elohim, and you were pleased with me. And as you can see, Jacob's really, really desperately working hard to make peace with his brother. Verse 11. Take, I pray you, my blessing that is brought to you, because Elohim has dealt graciously with me, and because I have enough. And he urged him, and he took it. And he said, let us take our journey, and let us go, and I will go before you. Now, it is significant that Esau receives the gift. You know, when you've wronged somebody, and you go to make it right, and you either repent before them, or you apologize, or you give them a gift and say, "This, I just wanted to say I'm sorry." If they push the gift to the side and say, no, I don't want it, what are they telling you? They're saying, no, things are not okay between us. I don't accept your apology. I don't accept your gift. But if the person receives it graciously, then you can see the mending of the relationships. It was very important as Jacob's pushing all this gift onto Esau and pleading with him to take it. And Esau agreed to take it. Verse 13. And he said unto him, my lord knows that the children are tender, and the flocks and herds are young with me. And if men shall override them one day. Hang on a second, let me make sure I didn't overpass something. And he said, let us take a journey and let us go, and I will go before you. And he said unto him, my lord. Okay, so Esau is trying to get Jacob to travel with him. And Jacob's not interested in that. So let's return to verse 13. And he said unto him, my lord knows that the children are tender, and the flocks and the herds with young are with me. And if men should overdrive them one day, all the flock will die. Let my lord, I pray you, pass over before his servant, and I will lead on softly according to the cattle that goes before me, and the children be able to endure until I come unto the Lord, until I come unto my lord in Seir. And Esau said, let me now leave with you some of the folk that are with me. And he said, what needs it? Let me find grace in thy sight of my lord. So Esau returned that day on his way unto Seir. And Yaakov journeyed to Kukoth, and built him a house and make a koth for his cattle. Therefore the name of the place is called Kukoth. And Yaakov came to Shalem, a city of Shechem, which is in the land of Canaan. When he came from Padan Aram, and pitched his tent before the city. And he brought a parcel of the field where he spread his tent, and at the hand of the children of Kamar, Shechem's father, for 100 pieces of money. And he erected there an altar, and he called it El Elohai Yisrael. And Dinah, the daughter of Leah, which she bore unto Yaakov, went out to see the daughters of the land. And when Shechem, the son of Kamar, the Chivi prince of the country saw her, he took her and lay with her and defiled her. And his soul clave unto Dinah, the daughter of Yaakov, and he loved the damsel and spoke kindly unto the damsel. And Shechem spoke unto his father, Hamor, saying, Get me this damsel to be my woman. And Yaakov heard that he had defiled Dinah, his daughter. Now his son were with his cattle in the field, and Yaakov held his peace until they were come. And Hamor, the father of Shechem, went out unto El Yaakov to commune with him. And the sons of Yaakov came out of the field when they heard it. And the men were grieved, and they were very wroth, because he had wrought folly in Israel in lying with Yaakov's daughter, which thing ought not to be done. And Hamor communed with them, saying, The soul of my son Shechem longs for your daughter. I pray you, give her him to be his woman, and make ye marriages with us, and give your daughters unto us, and take our daughters unto you. And ye shall dwell with us, and the land shall be before you. Dwell and trade ye therein, and get you possessions therein. And Shechem said unto his father, and unto her brethren, Let me find grace in your eyes. And what shall you say unto me, I will give. Ask me never so much dowry and gift, and I will give according as you shall say unto me, but give me the damsel to be my woman. And the sons of Yaakov answered Shechem and Hamor his father deceitfully, and said, Because he had defiled Dinah our sister, and they said unto him, We cannot do this thing to give our sister to the one that is uncircumcised, for that we are a reproach unto us. But in this we will consent unto you, if you will be as we be, that every male be circumcised. Then we will give our daughters unto you, and we will take your daughters unto us, and we will dwell with you, and we will become one people. But if you will not hearken unto us to be circumcised, then we will take our daughter, and we will be gone. And their words pleased Hamor and Shechem, Hamor's son, and the young man deferred not to do the thing, because he had delight in Yaakov's daughter, and he was more honorable than all the house of his father. And Hamor and Shechem, his son, came into the gate of their city and communed with the men of their city, saying, These men are peaceable with us, therefore let them dwell in the land and trade therein, for the land, behold, it is large enough for them. Let us take their daughters unto us for women, and let us give them our daughters. Only herein will the men consent unto us for to dwell with us, to be one people, if every male among us be circumcised as they are circumcised. Shall not their cattle and their substance and every beast of theirs be ours? Only let us consent unto them, and they will dwell with us. And unto Hamor and Shechem his son hearkened all that went out of the gate of the city, and every male was circumcised, all that went out of the gate of the city. Alright. Before we move forward, let's just kind of recap what's going on here. Shechem defiles Dinah. Now, it doesn't say that it was forced upon her or anything like that, although it may have been, but that doesn't seem to be the case to me. It seems like he laid with her, and it's a thing that ought not to be done for many reasons. And of course, it's a defilement in the eyes of Jacob and Jacob's sons. And now the king, Shechem, his father, Hamor, he comes and he pleads with them to let his son have Dinah. And it says that Jacob's sons dealt deceitfully with him and said, Sure, yeah, we'll do this thing if you and every man get circumcised. Every man in your city be circumcised. And of course, they're willing to do it because not only do they want Jacob's daughters and all the women that are with Jacob, but they also want all the cattle and the livestock. So they're thinking, we're going to combine, and now we're all going to be filthy rich, and we're going to have their women. And so they all get circumcised. And here is what took place. Verse 25. And it came to pass on the third day, when they were sore, that the two of the sons of Jacob, Shimeon and Levi, Dinah's brethren, took each man his sword and came upon the city boldly and slew all the males. And they slew Hamor and Shechem his son with the edge of the sword, and they took Dinah out of Shechem's house and went out. The sons of Yaakov came upon the slain and spoiled the city because they had defiled their sister. They took their sheep and their oxen and their asses and that which was in the city and that which was in the field, and all their wealth and all their little ones and all their women they took captive, and spoiled even all that was in the house. And Yaakov said to Shem, Shimeon, and Levi, "You have troubled me to make me to stink among the inhabitants of the land, among the Canaim and among the Perazim. And I, being few in number, they shall gather themselves together against me and slay me, and I shall be destroyed, I and my house." And they said, "Should he deal with our sister as with a harlot?" And so Jacob's concerned. He's like, you guys went in and you slaughtered this city, and now all the inhabitants around are going to gather together and come against us. But as we're going to see, the opposite happens. Instead, Elohim sends terror among the people because of what Jacob did, and so Jacob is left alone. He's walking in the favor of God. Of course, he is to be favored. Chapter 35. And Elohim said unto El, Yaakov, "Arise and go up to Bethel, and dwell there, and make there an altar unto Elohim that appeared unto you when you fled from the face of Esau your brother." Then Yaakov said unto his household and to all that were with him, "Put away the strange Elohai that are among you, and be clean and change your garments." So in other words, Jacob's saying, hey, any idols or any junk like that that you have, get rid of it. Why? Because we're getting ready to go build an altar to the Lord. Verse 3. "And let us arise and go up to Bethel, and I will make there an altar unto Elohim, who answered me in the day of my distress and was with me on the way which I went." And they gave unto El Yaakov all the strange Elohai which were in their hand, and all their earrings which were in their ears, and Yaakov hid them under the oak which was by Shechem. And they journeyed, and the terror of Elohim was upon the cities that were round about them, and they did not pursue after the sons of Yaakov. So Yaakov came to Luz, which is in the land of Canaan, that is, Bethel, and all the people that were with him. And he built there an altar, and he called the place El Bethel, because there Elohim appeared unto him. Because there Elohim appeared unto him, when he fled from the face of his brother. But Deborah, Rivka's nurse, died, and she was buried beneath Bethel, under the oak, and the name of it was called Alon Bekoth. And Elohim appeared unto El Yaakov again, and when he came out of Padam Aram, and he blessed him. And Elohim said unto him, "Your name is Yaakov. Your name shall not be called any more Yaakov, but Yisrael shall be your name." And he called his name Yisrael. And Elohim said unto him, "I am El Shaddai. Be fruitful and multiply a nation, and company a nation shall be of you. And kings shall come out of your lines. And the land which I gave Abraham and Yitzhak to you will I give it, and to your seed after you will I give the land." And Elohim went up from him in the place where he talked with him. And Yaakov set up a pillar in the place where he talked with him, even a pillar of stone, and he poured a drink offering thereon, and he poured oil thereon. And Yaakov called the name of the place where Elohim spoke with him, Bet El. And so here we have another one of those, like, miraculous interactions with God. You know, it says that Elohim appeared unto El Yaakov again. And this time Elohim reminds him that, hey, I'm going to give this land that I gave to your fathers Abraham and Yitzhak, Isaac. And he reminds him, hey, your name is Jacob, but you will no longer be called Jacob. Instead, you are going to be called Israel. So he reminds him from the second time that's what his name's going to be. So the first time he wrestles with God, and God says, your name's going to be Israel. And then he appears to him once more and tells him again. Verse 16. And they journeyed from Bethel, and there was built a little way, and there was but a little way to come to Ephrathah. And Rachel travailed, and she had hard labor. And it came to pass, when she was in hard labor, that the midwife said unto her, "Fear not, you shall have this son also." And it came to pass, as her soul was departing, for she died, that she called his name Ben-Oni. But his father called his name Benjamin. And Rachel died and was buried in the way of Ephrathah, which is Beit Lachem. And Yaakov set a pillar upon her grave. That is the pillar of Rachel's grave unto this day. So Rachel goes into hard labor with Benjamin. And then it says that she named him Ben-Oni, but Jacob changed the name to Ben-Yamin. So we might ask ourselves, why is this? Well, if we're just reading in standard English Bible, we're going to overlook this. We're not going to think about this. Or moreover, if we're thinking in a standard Western mindset, we're just going to be like, oh, he changed his name to Benjamin. We don't typically understand that every name means something, and there's a purpose in naming people these things. Every name has a meaning. And so I'm going to get the Chumash out. I'm going to read it again, and I'm going to read you the commentary about this name change. So here's what it says in the Chumash. And they journeyed from Bethel, and there was still a stretch of land to go to Ephrath. When Rachel went into labor and had difficulty in her childbirth, and it was when she had difficulty in her labor that the midwife said unto her, have no fear, for this one too is a son for you. And it came to pass, as her soul was departing, for she died, that she called his name Ben-Oni. But his father called him Ben-Yamin. All right, here's what the commentary says. Ben-Oni literally means son of my mourning, as if to say, his birth has caused my death. And so Rachel's calling him Ben-Oni, son of my mourning. Why? Because she's dying, giving labor. And so she named him, the names mean something. This is what the name was to be, because he's the son of her mourning. She's dying as she's giving birth. But Jacob changes it. Benjamin. And this is according to Jewish rabbis. So take it with whatever, a grain of salt, I guess. Benjamin, so this is from Rashi. He offers two interpretations. The name is a contraction of the word Ben, Yamin, son of the right. That is the son of the south. Since the south is to the right of someone's name, since the old name was contained in the new one, Abraham. Thus, to use the name Abram would be to negate his existence of the enhanced soul implied by the new name. So it's a name change. It's kind of like Abraham became a new person when the hay was added. And so that's kind of the point that he's making, that long story short, Jacob just doesn't want his name to mean son of my mourning. So instead it would be son of my right, or son of the south, according to this interpretation. I'm just debating here whether to read this whole commentary. Let's just read it together. I'm curious what it says, and then we'll finish up our portion here. So here's the commentary from the Chumash about the birth of Benjamin and the death of Rachel. At this time, Jacob had 11 sons, one short of the total of 12, which both he and the matriarchs knew prophetically would be the number of the tribes of Israel. Rachel had been barren for many years. She had seen not only her sister, but the maidservants give birth before her. She longed for one more son. Now she was finally pregnant. On the way to the home she had never seen, and 8 years after the birth of her son, Joseph, she gave birth to her cherished second son. The sages observe that the woman's account is examined in heaven when she is in labor, when Rachel improperly stole her father's teraphim, which Jacob's knowledge he told Laban, with whomever you find your goods, he shall not live. As a result, she was to be punished, but the judgment against her was not carried out until she was with childbirth. The idea that the people were judged in times of danger is expressed in the adage, when the ox is fallen, the knife is sharpened. That's from the Midrash. It may also be that God delayed her death until she could give birth to Benjamin, for otherwise this woman of historic righteousness would have been denied her full share in the building of the nation. Reuben sees the timing of Rachel's death as an indication of a great holiness of Eretz Yisrael. The Torah would have later forbid a man to be married to two sisters. and the patriarchs observed the Torah before it was given. According to Rambam, it is only outside the land that Jacob would be married to both Rachel and Leah, but in the land, with its high degree of holiness, he would never have married Rachel after having been married to Leah. Because of Rachel's merit, she did not die before they entered into the land, but because of Jacob's merit and the sanctity of the land, he could not remain married to both of them, Yeretz Yisrael. Thus she died only after they had entered the land. And this is the thing about the Mishnah and all the rabbinical commentary and oral stuff is, sometimes I think we're too harsh. We're saying, oh, they're just making up all kinds of stuff. But really what they're trying to do is they're just trying to deal and make sense of the situation. And really when we read the scriptures, we do that too. We just don't write it down and call it authoritative. But we're all, you know, we're all likewise interpreting the Bible and trying to make sense of the things that are taking place. And so the commentaries suggest that, well, you know, she died because of that statement that Jacob made when Laban came and said, where is my idols, which Rachel had stolen from her father. And Jacob said, whoever has it shall die. And so they're saying, okay, so she had to die. Just one interpretation. So they give a couple different interpretations. Anyway, we're never going to get through this if I don't hurry up. I just wanted to kind of share those thoughts with you, and that's kind of what those commentaries look like, for those of you who are interested. And so you got to be careful with them, but they're interesting to read. All right. Verse 21. We got to go. We still got 40, almost. We still have almost 60 verses to read. Let's get on with this. And Yisrael journeyed and spread his tent beyond Migdal Eder. And it came to pass, when Yisrael dwelt in that land, that Reuven went and lay with Bilhah, his father's concubine. And Yisrael heard it. Now the sons of Yaakov were 12. Okay, before we read this, the Torah is going out of its way to tell us, very briefly, that Reuben lied with Jacob's wife, Bilhah. That was one of the maidservants. And that Jacob knew about it. And so we have to ask ourselves, does that cause some issues with the relationship? And I think what we'll see in the next parsha, as we get to the stories of Joseph, we'll see Reuben desperately trying to almost earn back favor with his father. And maybe I'm reading too much into it, but it's worth thinking about. And we must remember that the Torah goes out of its way, two verses, just to let us know about this and then completely moves on from it. So it's just like, take note of this. And whenever you see the Bible just kind of saying, take note of something, like it's just giving you like a one-liner, I think, at least I believe, and the way I look at it is, well, there's probably a purpose for knowing about this as we read on in the future. Now the sons of Yaakov were 12. The sons of Leah, Reuven, Yaakov's firstborn, Shimeon, Levi, Yehuda, Yishkar, Zuvalon, and the sons of Rachel, Joseph, and Benjamin. And the sons of Bilhah, Rachel's handmaid, Dan, and Naphtali. And the sons of Zilpha, Leah's handmaid, Gad, and Asher. These are the sons of Yaakov, which were born to him in Padan Aram. And Yaakov came to El Yitshek, his father, unto Mamre, unto Kiryat Arabia, which is in Chevron, where Abraham and Yitshek sojourned. And the days of Yitshek were 180 years, and Yitshek gave up his ruach, that is to say, his spirit, and died, and was gathered unto his people, being old and full of days. And his son Esau and Yaakov buried him. Chapter 36. Now, these are the generations of Esau, who is in Edom. Esau took his woman of the daughters of Canaan, and Adah the daughter of Elion in Chitti, and Ohilvamah the daughter of Anna, the daughter of Sidv on Shavi, and Basmath, Yishmael's daughter, sister of Nevayot. And Adah bore Esau Eliphaz, and Bashmah bore Ruiel, and Ohilvamah born Yi Ish, and Ya'alam, and Korak. These are the sons of Esau which were born unto him in the land of Canaan. And Esau took his women, and his sons, and his daughters, and all the persons of his house, and his cattle, and all his beast, and all his substance which he had gotten in the land of Canaan, and went into a country from the face of his brother Yaakov. For their riches were more than they might dwell together, and the land wherein they were strangers could not bear them because of their cattle. Thus dwelt Esau in Mount Seir. Esau is Edom. And these are the generations of Esau, the father of Edomim, in Mount Seir. These are the names of Esau's sons: Elphaz, the son of Adah, the woman of Esau; Reuel, the son of Basma, the woman of Esau. The sons of Elphaz were Teman, Omar, Sespho, and Gatam, and Kenaz. And Tema was concubine to Elphaz, Esau's son, and she bore Elphaz, Emlek, and were the sons of Adah, Esau's women. And these are the sons of Reuel: Nachath, and Zerach, Shema, and Mizah. These were the sons of Basma, Esau's woman. And these were the sons of Ahivamah, the daughter of Anna, daughter of Sivan, Esau's woman, and she bore to Esau Yaish, and Ya'alam, and Korach. These were the dukes of the sons of Esau, the sons of Elphaz, the firstborn son of Esau: Duke Teman, Duke Amor, Duke Sepho, Duke Kenaz, Duke Korach, Duke Katam, and Duke Emlek. And these are the dukes that came of Elphaz in the land of Edom. These were the sons of Adah. And these are the sons of Reuel, Esau's son: Duke Nachath, Duke Zarach, Duke Shema, Duke Mizah. And these are the dukes that came of Reuel in the land of Edom. And these are the sons of Basma, Esau's woman. And these are the sons of Ahilvamah, Esau's woman: Duke Yaish, Duke Ya'alam, Duke Korach. These were the dukes that came of Ahilvamah, and the daughter of Anna, Esau's woman. These are the sons of Esau, who is in Edom, and these are their dukes. These are the sons of Seir, the Kori, who inhabited the land: Lotan, and Shavel, and Sitvan, and Anna, and Dishan, and Esther, Etzer, and Dishan. These are the dukes of Karim, and the children of Seir, the land of Edom. And the children of Lotan were Hore, and Haman, and Lotan's sister was Timnah. And the children of Shavah were these: Elian, and Machsh, and Manakath, and Evel, Shafi, and Onam. And these are the children of Zitvan, both Ayah and Anah. This was that Anah found the mules in the wilderness as he fed the asses of Sivan, his father. And the children of Anah were these: Dishan, and Ohilvamah, the daughter of Anah. And these are the children of Dishan: Hedma, and Ishban, and Yithran, and Kiran. And the children of Etzer are these: Bilhan, and Za'avan, and Akan. The children of Dishan are these: Utz and Aran. These are the dukes that came of Korim: Duke Lotan, Duke Shaval, Duke Sivan, Duke Anah, Duke Dishan, Duke Etzer, Duke Dishan. These are the dukes that came of Korim among their dukes in the land of Seir. And these are the kings that reigned in the land of Edom before there reigned any king over the children of Yisrael. And Bela the son of Beor reigned in Edom, and the name of his city was Dinhabah. And Bela died, and Yovav the son of Zerach of Bochrah reigned in his stead. And Yovav died, and Cushan the land of Tinmani reigned in his stead. And Cushan died, and Hadad the son of Bedad, who smote Midian in the field of Moab, reigned in his stead. And the name of the city was Aviath. And Hadad died, and Samla Masrakah reigned in his stead. And Samla died, and Shaul of Rakavath by the river reigned in his stead. And Shaul died, and Baal Canaan, the son of Achbor, reigned in his stead. And Baal Hanan, the son of Achbor, died, and Hadar reigned in his stead. And the name of the city is Pau. And his woman's name was Mahit Vael, the daughter of Matred, the daughter of Me-Zabah. And these are the names of the dukes that came of Esau according to their families and their places, and by their names, Duke Timnah, Duke Aliah, Duke Aliah, Duke Yaith, Duke Ohilvamah, Duke Eli, Duke Pinyan, Duke Quenaz, Duke Taman, Duke Mitzar, Duke Megdayel, Duke Laram. These be the dukes of Edom, according to their habitations in the land of their possession. He is Esau, the father of Edoim. And that, my friends, is this week's Torah portion. And it's a very long-winded one to get through. But as always, I pray in the powerful name of Yeshua, in the powerful name of Jesus, that you've been blessed by this study this morning. If you're being blessed by this work, you can support it by going to scriptureandprophecy.com, and that's where you go to become a Patreon subscriber, get access to 5 Hebrew beginner training videos to get you started towards learning Hebrew if you're interested in that. But more importantly, you just support this work and make it possible. There's also PayPal, and I also just want to take a minute and thank all of you for the donations and the support. I want to thank there was a listener named Andrew who sent me a beautiful leather-bound King James Bible. I'm very, very grateful for that. Thank you, Andrew. Just your guys' graciousness towards me is far beyond what I even come close to deserving, and I'm very grateful. And it's my great privilege to do this work, to get to record reading and studying the Bible. What a great thing to be grateful for and thankful for, and I am, so thank you very much for that. Okay, that's all I've got for you. Before the week's over, we will get out our prophets portion as well, which will go along with the theme that we've studied today. Peace and grace be with all of you, and until next time, God bless.